Joseph learned much that evening by the sea. Hosts of information thronged upon him. So he was going to know Amun, the city of cities and talk of the world, a subject of conversation amongst the remotest populations, where rumor said that it had 100 gates and more than 100,000 inhabitants. Would Joseph's eyes then not run over, after all, when they caught sight of the metropolis? He saw that he must firmly resolve beforehand not to fall prey to vacant admiration. He stuck out his lips disdainfully, but despite his efforts to compose his features to the honor of his own god, he could not quite escape a certain embarrassment, for he felt somewhat afraid of No. More particularly the name of Amun alarmed him. That mighty name, intimidating to everybody and having a domineering ring, even in regions strange to the god. Trepidation seized him at the thought of entering the throne of the god's cult and seat of his power. The sovereign of Egypt, ruler of the two lands, king of the gods, that was Amun. Joseph knew it well, and confusion dwelt in the thought of that unique power. Amun was the highest, if indeed only in the eyes of the children of Egypt. It seemed it would be useful to speak of Amun, and practice himself in talk of him. He said, Waysays Lord in his chapel and in his bark, that is one of the more exalted gods hereabouts?
The more exalted, answered the old man. Truly thou speakest not better than thy understanding. What thinkest thou that Pharaoh hath set before him of bread and cake, beer, wine, and geese for his consuming? That is a god without compare, I tell thee. What treasures he calleth his own, movable and immovable, my breath would give out, would I tell the tale of them, and the number of his scribes who administer all is like to the stars.
Wonderful, said Joseph. A very important god indeed, according to all thou relatest. Only I asked, to be precise, not about his importance, but about his nobility.
Bow down before him, advised the old man, since thou wilt live in Egypt, and make not too many distinctions between important and noble, as though one could not stand for the other, and both were not all the same. For Amun's are all the ships of the seas and rivers, and the rivers and seas are his. He is the sea and the land. He is also Tor Nater, the cedar mountain, whose trunks grow for a barge called Amun's Front is Mighty. In Pharaoh's shape he goeth in unto his first and true wife, and begets Hor in the palace. He is Baal in all his members. Doth that impress thee? He is the sun. Amun Re is his name. Doth that satisfy thy demands as to nobility, or not quite?
But I heard, Joseph said, he is a ram in the darkness of the innermost chamber.
I heard. As thou hast understood, so speakest thou, and not a doit better. Amun is a ram, just as Bastet in the land of the Delta is a cat, and the great writer of Shmoon an ibis and an ape, for they are sacred in their animals and the animals sacred in them. Thou must learn much if thou wilt live in the land and wilt live before him, be it only as the lowest of his youthful slaves. How wilt thou see the god, if not in the beast? The three are one, god, man, and beast. For if the divine wed with the beast, then it is the man, as Pharaoh, when he is at the feast, puts on a beast's tail, according to ancient custom. And if, on the other hand, the beast wed with the man, then it is a god, and the divine is not otherwise to be regarded and understood than in such a marriage. Thus you see Heket, the great midwife, like a toad on the wall, to judge from her head, and Anpu, the opener of the way, dog-headed. Lo, in the beast, man and god find themselves, and the beast is the sacred place of their meeting and their union, sacred and honorable in its nature as such. And very worthy of honor among beasts is that one in which the ram cohabits with the pure virgin in the city of Jadet.
I have heard of it, Joseph said. Doth my lord approve of the practice?
Aye, asked the Maonite. Leave an old man in peace. We are traveling merchants, middlemen, at home everywhere and nowhere. And for us the word holdeth good. Nourish thou my belly, I honor thy customs. Heed it in the world, for it will behoove thee too.
Never, answered Joseph, will I in Egypt, in the house of the fan-bearer, say a word against the honor of the Feast of the Covering. But between thee and me, let me point out that in this word honorable lieth a snare for the unwary. For easily doth man hold the old for honorable, simply because it is old, and imagineth they are the same. But the catch is that sometimes we do reverence to the old when it is simply worn out and rotted with age. Then its honorableness is but seeming, and is in fact an abomination and indecency before the Lord. Just between you and me, the presentation of the human virgin at Jadet seems more like an indecency.
How wilt thou distinguish? And where should we be if every booby were to set himself up as the navel of the world, and as a judge of what is sacred and what merely old, what still worthy of reverence and what an abomination? Soon there would be nothing sacred. I do not believe that thou wilt hold thy tongue and hide thy impious thoughts, for it is peculiar to such thoughts as thou hast that they must be uttered. I know that.
In thy presence, my lord, it is easy to learn to hold age and honor as the same.
Flatter me not with sweet words, for I am but a traveling merchant. Heed rather my warning that thou run not up against the children of Egypt, and speak to thy undoing, for certainly thou canst not keep thy thoughts. Therefore must thou take care that thy thoughts are fitting, and not only thy words. Certainly nothing is more holy than the union of God, man, and beast in the sacrifice. Reckon to and fro between these three with reference to the sacrifice, and they are resolved therein. For in the sacrifice are all three, and each represents the other. And therefore Amun moves as sacrificial ram in the darkness of the furthermost chamber.
I know not rightly how I feel, my lord and purchaser, reverend merchant. It is so dark while thou instructest me, and scattered sparkles of light trickle down like dust of precious stones from the stars. I must rub my eyes. Pardon me for doing it, for I am dazed. And as thou sittest before me on thy mat, it is to me as though it were the head of a green frog that thou wearest, and as though thou squattest there wise and wide and comfortable like a toad.
Seest thou that thou canst not hold thy thoughts, however offensive they may be? Why wilt thou and wouldst thou see a toad in me?
My eyes ask not if it is my will. Just like a squatting toad thou seemest to me under the stars, for thou wast Heket, the great midwife, when the well bore me, and thou didst lift me from my mother.
Ah, chatterer, that was no great nurse that helped thee to the light. Heket the she-frog is called great because she was by at the second birth and resurrection of the mangled one, when the lower world fell to him, but to Hor, the upper, according to the belief of the children of Egypt, and Osiris became the first of the west, king and judge of the dead.
I like that. So then, if one is going toward the west, one must at least become the first of those there. But instruct me, my lord, is then Osiris the sacrifice so great in the eyes of the children of Kempt that Heket became a great frog because she was midwife at his rebirth?
He is great entirely.
Great above the greatness of Amun?
Amun is great by reason of his kingdom. His renown affrights stranger peoples so that they cut their cedars for him. But Osiris, the mangled one, is great in the love of the people. All the people from Janet in the delta up to Heb, the elephant island. There is not one among all, from the coughing pack-slave of the quarry, who liveth millionfold, to Pharaoh, who liveth once and singly, and worshippeth himself in his temple, I say to thee, there is not one who did not know and love him, and wish to find his grave in Abdu, his city, at the grave of the mangled one, were it possible. And since it is not possible, yet they all hang fervently on him, trusting in the hope of becoming like him at their hour, and to live forever.
To be like God?
To be as the God, and to be like him, that is, one with him, so that the dead man is Osiris, and so is called.
What all thou sayest! But spare me, my lord, in thy teaching, and help my poor understanding, as thou helpedst me out of the womb of the well. For it is not for everyone's understanding, that which thou wilt teach me here in the night by the slumbering sea, of the beliefs of the children of Mizraim. Shall I then understand that it would be in the power of death to change nature, and for the dead to be a god with the beard of a god?
Yes, that is the confident belief of all the folk of the land, and they all, as one, love it so fervently from Zoan to Elephantine, for that they have had to wrest it for themselves in prolonged struggle.
They have wrested the belief for themselves in prolonged struggle, and held out for it until the dawn?
They have brought it to pass, for in the beginning and originally it was only Pharaoh, he alone, Hor in the palace, who, when he died, came to Osiris and became one with him, so that he was like a god and lived forever. But all those who cough as they drag the heavy statues, all the brickmakers, the pot-drillers, those behind the plough and those in the mines, they have not rested and have struggled till they achieved it and made it good, so that they too now, at their hour, become Osiris and are called Osiris Khnumhotpe, Osiris Rechmire, after their death, and live forever.
Again it pleaseth me that which thou sayest. Thou hast chidden me for the view that every child of earth hath his own universe about him for himself alone, and is the center thereof. But in one way or the other, it seemeth to me the children of Egypt shared the view, since each would be Osiris after his death, as in the beginning only Pharaoh, and have brought it to pass.